It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, Wisconsin often gets compared to Minnesota when it comes to the economy. But the differences may have a lot to do with one factor, the Twin Cities. We'll hear about a new report from the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance.
First, President Obama delivered his final State of the Union address last night. Avoiding the usual list of new proposals, Obama opted to talk about national trends and about his broad view for the future.
He began the speech by addressing the deep divisions that stand between the parties, went on to admit a regret of his time in office.
I have no doubt a president with the gifts of Lincoln or Roosevelt might have better bridged the divide. And I guarantee I'll keep trying to be better so long as I hold this office. But my fellow Americans, this cannot be my task or any president's alone.
Now, despite that partisan divide, the president urged cooperation and spent a lot of his speech addressing anti-immigrant rhetoric and recent concerns over national security. Here with us now to talk about both the State of the Union and Governor Nikki Haley's response is USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Nice to be with you.
Well, Paul, was it a surprise to you that the president sort of broke format on this, didn't do a laundry list of proposals, and instead sort of went big picture and talked about what he'd done and the big picture issues of his presidency?
Well, you know, we had a warning from the White House that was going to be the approach this time. I mean, I think they recognize that there's not a lot of lists of things they can ask Congress to do at this point. A Republican Congress going into a presidential election year is not likely to just sort of take up and pass a bunch of new initiatives the president, the Democratic president, is offering. I think what surprised us most is how political the speech turned out to be. I mean, he really directly rebutted a whole bunch of the campaign rhetoric of the Republican front runners, both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz to a lesser degree, and really said, you know, don't believe what Republicans are telling you on the campaign trail about the troubles America faces.
He talked in general terms about the Republicans, but not in specific so much as attacking candidates. What do you make of his approach with that?
Right. Well, it was pretty thinly veiled, but, you know, he didn't name anybody. But when he says, you know, we can't, you know, attack people for being Muslim, well, you know, that's clearly a reflection of Donald Trump's comment that we should, you know, bar Muslims from coming to the United States. When he says, you know, it's ridiculous to say that we're just going to carpet bomb ISIS, well, that was a direct quote from Ted Cruz. So, you know, he was clearly, yeah, he wasn't using anybody's name, but I think everybody in the room knew who he was talking about.
And how did that go over? What are the next day ripples from the Republican Party there and from Democrats on the political nature of that stuff?
Well, I mean, the Democrats, I think, agree. They say, you know, Obama, again, this goes back to the sort of the true division we're facing. You know, they say Obama made the case that we need to, you know, bring everyone together and play nicer and not be sort of giving in to our fears. And the Republicans say that Obama took what is supposed to be a presidential address to the Congress and turned it into a political diatribe. And so, you know, what you heard depends largely on where you sat, to the right or to the left.
Right, and it's an interesting thing because on the one hand, you hear those political overtones, pretty direct overtones at times, directed at the Republican camp. On the other hand, he's saying the thing I feel worst about my entire two terms is that I didn't do more to bring people together. I mean, after all, this is the guy who ran on hope and change and bridging that divide. And there was not a whole lot of bridging that went on during his almost 8 years. But he did talk about it. He felt bad about it last night. At least that's what he said.
We were kind of yucking that up last night. This is, you know, his speech was essentially, you guys are all wrong and you're jerks, but let us come together and reason together, you know. And you know, interestingly, this morning I was talking to Nancy Pelosi at her weekly press conference, and I asked her, you know, don't Democrats have some responsibility for this? You know, Obama's talking about the polarization and how he feels bad that he hasn't done more to reach through that and fix the polarization. Isn't some of that the Democrats' fault, too? And she looked at me like I had three heads and said, no. It's, you know, as soon as he was elected, the Republicans said, and this is a reference to an old Mitch McConnell comment, that, you know, his primary goal is to make sure that Obama's a one-term president. And that was the Republican agenda, and there's no way we could work with them. It's like, well, okay then. So it's all the Republicans' fault. And that's really how they view it.
He said last night, I mean, it was an effort at humility, no matter how you read that. He said, if I were a Lincoln or a Roosevelt, maybe I would have done better. What do you think about a line like that? Is it genuine?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, they ruled in different times, Lincoln and Roosevelt. You know, it was bringing a country through a true crisis. At the moment, you know, one of the interesting things about Obama's time is that this is a time of great upheaval in some ways, but the country is not at the moment in a kind of incredible crisis. In fact, the incredible crisis might have been 2007, 2008, 2009, and Obama actually did manage to get the Congress to agree to a, you know, what was it, $800 billion stimulus package. So there are times when leadership has been possible, and even bipartisan agreement has been possible. For that matter, Obama even recognized that in his speech last night that Speaker Paul Ryan was able to work with the president at the end of the year last year to avoid a government shutdown and to get a spending bill passed and some tax extensions passed. So it's not that they can't do anything. It's just that their ability to agree on stuff is extraordinarily prescribed, and it really only happens when we're staring at the bottom of a cliff.
Right, and he did, as you said, mention working together with Paul Ryan. Also said, well, maybe that could happen again in the future. There was some optimism there, and that seemed to be the tone that he was going for. You heard a lot of politicism, but a lot of people also heard optimism there, saying, yeah, you know, here we are going out my last term, and things are looking pretty good. And people said, hey, even Michelle Obama was wearing a marigold or a mango-colored dress to express hope and optimism. Did you get that when you watched this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was very clear that part of this speech was what I would consider the basis of what Obama's going to be saying on the campaign trail over the next 6 months for whoever the Democratic candidate for president is. It was essentially, don't believe the argument that the country is going down the toilet. You know, Obama was saying, basically, look, the economy is better than people are telling you. We're not in a World War III. We are not existentially threatened by ISIS. The country is actually in pretty good shape, is what he was saying, and we should take pride in that, and we should, you know, not let our fears guide us. And I think the second half of that is not let people who are running for president preying upon our fears guide us.
We're digesting last night's State of the Union address with USA Today's Paul Singer. And here's a little bit from last night. This is President Obama sounding an optimistic note, calling for cooperation.
Opportunity and security for our families, a rising standard of living, a sustainable, peaceful planet for our kids. All that is within our reach. But it will only happen if we work together.
That sounds a bit like the 2008 Obama, a little bit echoing that hope and change that he ran on. What did you hear there, Paul?
Right. And you know, there are some things where there is potential agreement with Republicans. It's not, I don't think, as broad as it would sound in those comments. I mean, I do know that you know, Obama is very interested, and in fact, the Obama administration has said several times they're interested in working with Republicans on some sentencing reform issues, some criminal justice issues. I mean, I think there's pretty broad agreement that there's more that we can do there. There's more the nation can do on, you know, sort of smart policing techniques, stuff like that. In a fairly narrow a list of issues, but there are real issues. One of the things that Speaker Ryan would love to be able to do is to tackle kind of a broader overhaul of the tax system. That, while I think President Obama would agree is a good idea, I doubt they'd be able to come to a broad agreement on principles, particularly in an election year. So, yeah, there is definitely an opportunity to move forward on some relatively small projects. The problem is, you know, it's an election year, as I said, so nobody wants to hand a win to the other side.
And as you said, there was some rosy views of the economy there, a major feature of his presidency, dealing with the flagging economy. And he also talked about income inequality that's been a big feature of the Democratic contender's rhetoric. Here's a clip from last night.
After years now of record corporate profits, working families won't get more opportunity or bigger paychecks just by letting big banks or big oil or hedge funds make their own rules at everybody else's expense.
And Paul, obviously Bernie Sanders has been beating that drum for a long time now. How does it sound coming out of the president's mouth?
Well, it's not at all surprising to hear coming out of Obama's mouth, because the president, he has basically been making this case, and I think the whole Democratic Party is going to be making this case all year long, that it is an economic inequality issue that is the primary concern, and I think the president was also saying that it is those economic inequalities that are creating the fears that the Republican candidates are preying upon. But this is, again, a direct contradiction to what the Republicans would describe as the problem in the country. They would say the problem is not too little regulation, but too much.
We're talking right now to USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. We're digesting President Obama's final State of the Union address last night.
And you can help out at 800-642-1234. What did you make of his speech? Do you think the president is right that there's fear-mongering going on? Do you agree with his optimistic view of America's present and future? Do you think he responded adequately to concerns about national security and the economy? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer, looking at President Obama's final State of the Union address.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. First of all, did you watch this thing? The viewership was projected to be pretty low. And if you did watch it, what did you make of the speech? Did you watch Governor Nikki Haley's response? And what do you think of her message for her own party? A little bit of controversy there. You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Paul, what about the viewership last night? Do we know how many people watched?
You know, I have actually not seen a report on that, honestly. But one way or the other, it is still going to be the biggest audience President Obama is going to have, probably, you know, towards the end of his presidency. I mean, he doesn't have many of these opportunities to address the whole nation at once. So even if it was not high from a television standpoint, it's a pretty big audience for the president and a pretty big deal for the president to be able to deliver his message to the whole country at once.
And this was the first State of the Union for Paul Ryan of Wisconsin to be sitting over the president's shoulder. I don't know how much there is to talk about there, but there was talk about him on Twitter. Did you have any thoughts, having watched a lot of these things, about what it was like seeing him there?
We actually have an interview with him today. My colleague Susan Page sat down and interviewed him today, and I don't think I'm yet at liberty to disclose everything he said, but we posted a little piece of it where he said it's kind of a challenge to sit there with a straight face, poker face, the entire time. He says, I was trying to just blend into the wallpaper, you know, and whenever the president would say something about his numbers, I would run the numbers in my head and think to myself, I think that's wrong, but he wouldn't say anything. And so the challenge for him, he said, it was exactly as you're saying, the first time through, is to try to sit there and disappear while Twitter goes wild with his, you know, built-in smirk.
And it's got to be a tough job. Well, there was a Republican response last night, not by Paul Ryan, of course, but by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. And she has been a choice pick. People are kicking her name around for vice president. Was this a test for her, maybe?
Maybe. You know, we joke a lot about the sort of toxic stain of giving the State of the Union response, because so many of those people have been seen as rising stars in either party and then have gone on to basically disappear into irrelevance. But nevertheless, Haley gave what was considered by a lot of people to be a pretty good speech, pretty good appearance, pretty good presentation. But today, a vocal group of conservatives have responded very negatively, saying that that her speech was really not truly conservative enough and didn't really reflect conservative values, and was being critical of particularly Donald Trump.
Right. Some people said that she came out of the gates a bit critical of her own party. Here's a little bit of what she had to say.
We as Republicans need to own that truth. We need to recognize our contributions to the erosion of the public trust in America's leadership. We need to accept that we've played a role in how and why our government is broken.
So she came out today and said, you know, she was trying to speak the truth, tell some of the hard truths. Do you think that that cost her that little bit there among her own party?
It might. I mean, there's also, she said, it's not only the sort of admitting that we're part of the responsible, the problem, I think. She also said that we can't give in to the angriest voices in our own party. And then went on to say, you know, immigrants should be allowed to come here if they plan to work hard and love our country and commit to our way of life.
So is that again, a Donald Trump, a veiled Donald Trump reference?
It's possible. You know, it's hard to tell. Depends on where you sit. But we've been talking to people today in the halls of Congress, particularly some of the conservatives, who were very unhappy and just felt like, you know, this was a poke at other conservatives and not an appropriate thing, and essentially that Nikki Haley is not conservative enough. And when was the last time we had a real, true conservative stand up and give the State of the Union a response? And, of course, we then said, well, what about Michelle Bachmann? She gave the State of the Union response. And they're, oh, yeah, but that wasn't the real response. That was the Tea Party response, not the official one.
Right. So what does it take to make it the real response?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, it has to be, you know, the Republicans have to give 5 minutes of national airtime to somebody who believes the most conservative or agrees with the most conservative wing of their party. And I don't think they're willing to do it.
And so coming out of this, as you said, this is one of the last major platforms that the president is going to have until the next election. What does this mean for him going out here? The Congress obviously not going to be cooperative at this point. So what lies ahead for President Obama?
Well, I think a lot of what lies ahead for Obama is trying to tell the story of his successes, his administration's successes, and the nation's successes over the past 8 years, in part because he wants to protect his and preserve his legacy, and in part because he wants to remind people that a Democratic president did good so that he can help elect the next Democratic president. I mean, the thing that's going to matter most to President Obama is to elect a Democratic president who will sustain things like Obamacare. Because if there's a Republican president, some of the things that President Obama considers his greatest achievements will go out the window very, very quickly. And I think that has to be very, very high in his agenda over the next 6 months or so.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Ben with us in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make what I feel is an adjustment or a correction, if that's the right word, to your correspondent's comment about the inability to achieve anything in the government is equally the fault of the Democrats and the Republicans. I think that fails to recognize the historic shift over the last decade or so of the Republican Party to the extreme right wing. Many of the people that are in office now in the Congress have replaced more moderate Republicans with really ideologues who are refusing to pass any legislation whatsoever if it in any way compromises with the Democrats.
All right, Ben, thanks for your call. Paul, what do you think?
Well, you know, that's pretty much what Nancy Pelosi was saying to us this morning, is that the reason Congress can't achieve anything is because there is a significant group of lawmakers in the Republican Party who are unwilling to compromise on anything. And maybe that is correct. I will say that, they have managed to pass spending bills. They have managed to keep government open. They just passed a $622 billion extension package of tax cuts with a significant number of Democratic votes combined with a good number of Republican votes, just not all of them. To some degree, the caller is correct that the challenge has been corralling enough Republican votes to get stuff done. The question is, as the Republicans would say, oh, yeah, but we could get more done if some of the Republicans would play along with as some of the Democrats would play along with us instead of demanding we play on their terms.
Some people saying they were surprised about the things that he didn't talk more about, one of those things being gun issues. There was an empty seat next to Michelle Obama to represent some victims lost to guns. But was there a surprise there?
You know, it was weird. He didn't mention anybody in the box. You know, the first lady's box is usually where they stuff people who are symbolic of various agenda items. So, you know, the military officer who stopped a potential terrorist attack on a European train was in the box. A guy whose partner was killed in the San Bernardino shootings was in the box. The empty chair, as you said, was in the box, again, to talk about gun violence and to symbolize the president's interest in addressing gun violence. And President Obama didn't address any of them. He didn't even call out Michelle Obama, which was weird. What's the point of having them all there if you're not going to give them a chance to stand up and get applause lines?
Well, he was trying to shorten it up a little, I heard last night.
But that's what he said, you know, keep it tight.
And it was. It was the last one for President Obama. Next year, I guess we'll be talking about somebody different. Well, Paul, thanks a lot for joining us and going over this one.
Thanks for having me, Veronica.
That was Paul Singer, USA Today Washington correspondent, joining us to talk about President Obama's final State of the Union address last night.